This is a Flashbooks audio summary on Extreme Ownership, How U.S. Navy SEALs Lead and Win. Written and published by GetFlashbooks.com, narrated by Dean Bukhari, original authors Jocko Willink and Leif Babin. Extreme Ownership is a book written on leadership by two former U.S. Navy SEALs, Jocko Willink and Leif Babin. In the book, they translate their experiences on the battlefield into actionable steps towards leadership success in the business world. And in the book, the authors tell us that leaders, they're responsible for everything under their care. They say, to quote them in their own words, as a leader, you must own everything in your world. This means that if there's a faulty production line in the warehouse, dissenting employees, a culture of distrust, or any breakdown along the supply chain, it's ultimately going to be the leader's fault. If you have a problem in your organization and you're the one leading it, then the responsibility ultimately lies on your shoulders. That's what this book is about. It's about learning how to take that responsibility and translate it into success for your organization. And the title, of course, gives away the overarching message of the book, Extreme Ownership. And using anecdotes from their time leading the SEAL Team 3 Task Force Bruiser, Jocko and Leif highlight the responsibility of leadership and the character development necessary to lead a well-equipped team. Each chapter in the book begins with a personal military example from their time in Iraq. From these personal stories, a leadership principle and application to business is then laid out. Now, we're actually basing each big idea off of each chapter from the book. There are 12 chapters total, and we'll go over them in a quick breakdown before we dive into the specifics of each big idea. Now, time and time again, success and failure, it's placed on the shoulders of the leader, not on those under them. There's no room or space for scapegoating. A leader, they tell us, is called to own up to the responsibility of his or her position. Both Jocko and Leif emphasize the importance of a leader to take the blame for any mistakes whatsoever, to not blame subordinates, but rather to allow subordinates to receive the praise for positive outcomes. The authors focus on simplification to avoid confusion, decisiveness and prioritization to execute effectively, and on being disciplined in all areas of life, while maintaining a certain degree of adaptability for times that call for quick decisions or swift actions in response to unexpected changes in the battlefield, or, in our case, the marketplace. The lessons they learned in battle when implemented in the business world can improve leadership and thereby create additional success for yourself and your organization. They translate life and death scenarios in combat to success and failure tactics in the boardroom. Extreme ownership is your ability as a leader to own everything in the world, knowing that there is no one else to blame. Belief in the mission and perseverance will bring about victory. That belief and that passion must be communicated clearly with action plans, and the vision that you have for your organization must be absolutely contagious to those being led in order for your organization to succeed and in order for that vision to be achieved. Let's talk about who this book is for and what you'll learn about in this summary. If you're in a leadership position over anyone or seek to one day be in a leadership position, then this book is for you. Maybe you're the CEO of a company, the point person on a project for school or work. Maybe you're managing volunteers. Maybe you're a pastor or a parent. We all find ourselves in one leadership role or another. And because of that, you'll find some really powerful nuggets of wisdom in this book summary that you'll be able to apply directly within your own life. And along the way, you'll learn the discipline and dedication of the U.S. Navy SEALs, and you'll find anecdotes not easily forgotten as these men learned valuable lessons in life and death situations that can be applied to your everyday life. The underlying principles are going to stay with you, and you'll walk away with a clear vision of what it takes to be proactive, organized, disciplined, and mission-minded in becoming a true leader. A crucial quote from the book. Implementing extreme ownership requires checking your ego and operating with a high degree of humility. Admitting mistakes, taking ownership, and developing a plan to overcome challenges are integral to any successful team. And now a quick tweetable summary to describe this book in a nutshell before we dive in to the big ideas. Every true leader takes extreme ownership of his team, checks his ego, and leads with humility. At the end of the day, it's not what you preach, but what you tolerate. Overview. Extreme ownership is broken down into 3 parts and 12 chapters. Each chapter highlights a new principle and provides an application to the business world. Here's a quick breakdown of the big ideas we'll be going over in this Flashbooks audio summary. Part 1 of the book is about winning the war within. And the big ideas we'll be going over from this part are as follows. Big idea number 1 is extreme ownership. Number 2, no bad teams, only bad leaders. Number 3 is believe. And number 4 is check the ego. Part 2 is called Laws of Combat, and the big ideas we'll be going over from that part are as follows. Big idea number 5 is cover and move. Number 6, simple. Number 7, prioritize and execute. And number 8, decentralized command. Part 3 is called Sustaining Victory. The big ideas we'll be going over from part 3 are as follows. Number 9, plan. Number 10, leading up and down the chain of command. Number 11, decisiveness amid uncertainty. And finally, number 12, discipline equals freedom. Let's dive in. Part 1, winning the war within. Big idea number 1, extreme ownership. Extreme ownership is the number one characteristic of any high-performance winning team in any military unit, organization, sports team, or business team in any industry. It's an essential characteristic to achieve success in any field. Chapter 1 of this book opens with Jocko's experience of a blue-on-blue attack, that is, friendly fire, under his command. Following the event, he was called on to present what went wrong and by who. And after going through notes, procedures, and reviewing the event in his mind, he realized that he had to place the blame on his own shoulders, regardless of how many other people messed up. They were all under his command, and the result ended up becoming the death of one of their soldiers. And in this friendly fire accident, it was his fault. He decided to own up to that. As the leader, he was in charge. He chose to own full responsibility, and in doing so, gained the trust of his team. And in doing this, Jocko was better prepared to create training scenarios to prevent friendly fire from occurring again in the future. He actually made a vow that this would never, ever happen again. But most importantly, he owned up to it. Even though he was not even present when the friendly fire scenario took place, he took responsibility because he was the leader in that scenario. This chapter really emphasizes how important it is that the leader must own everything in his or her world. But what does this look like in the business world? Well, it means if an employee is underperforming, the leader needs to first look in the mirror. Is everything being communicated well? Are tactics clear? Is training available? Are resources available? Is there a better way to prepare the employee? In order for extreme ownership to work, The leader must possess humility, courage, and the ability to improve and own up to mistakes. The ego has got to be set aside to build a better mission-focused team. For example, if the leader of a corporation, say the vice president, is full of excuses, this leads to a culture in which everyone else is susceptible to making excuses as well. It also leads to a culture that lacks responsibility. It's not until the vice president takes ownership for everything that he is able to then move forward and objectively view what could be done to improve and overcome the challenges. The bottom line? Ego has to be tossed. A leader must accept blame and seek out constructive criticism and take responsibility for everything under his or her command. Big idea number two. No bad teams, only bad leaders. Quote, when setting expectations, no matter what has been said or written, if substandard performance is accepted and no one is held accountable, if there are no consequences, that poor performance becomes the new standard. Unquote. This chapter, No Bad Teams, Only Bad Leaders, opens with what's known as Hell Week. This is one of the most brutal things that Navy SEALs in training must undergo. They're pushed to the absolute limit during Hell Week, physically and psychologically, often doing intense physical activity with no more than an hour of sleep over a 48 to 72 hour period of time. That's intense. And one of the activities the men are subjected to doing during this Hell Week is an obstacle course in which teams must carry boats over their heads through a series of obstacles. The winning team of this obstacle course receives a moment of rest. That's their reward. The losing team is punished with more physical demands. Strong teams would have a leader that communicated the SEAL instructor's directions well. Team members would compensate for each other's weaknesses, and no one would set out to blame one another, but rather pick up the slack themselves wherever needed. During this particular Hell Week, two teams stood out. The first team won every challenge. They picked up each other's slack, communicated well, and encouraged one another. The second team lost every challenge, blamed one another, and the leader complained of his poor luck in acquiring this particular group of soldiers. Seeing what was going on, the SEAL instructor swapped out the leaders on each team. Leader 1 was able to lead Team 2 to take first place, while Leader 2 managed to hold back Team 1 in second place. The takeaway? There are no bad teams, only bad leaders. You see how the scenario switched when the leaders were changed? It didn't matter who was on the team necessarily as much as it mattered who was leading the team and what the overall result was after the leaders were switched out. Leader 1 was able to lead Team 2 to take first place. That was the team that was doing poorly with the other guy. And Leader 2 managed to take a team that was already ahead, that was already crushing it, and hold them back into failure. So the takeaway again, no bad teams, only bad leaders. A leader casts a vision for the team to work together toward a focused goal, holds the team to high standards, and pushes them towards improvement. Blame was not cast on others, but owned. Each individual was encouraged to push harder and harder and harder. A true leader, like the SEAL instructor, is able to find the underperformers and remove them from the team in order to keep them from bringing the whole team down. In this case, the leader of Team 2 was removed from what he felt was bad luck and shown that the problem actually lied with his own leadership skills. It was his responsibility. The big idea from this chapter strongly emphasizes that it's not what you preach, it's what you tolerate. It's not what you preach, it's what you tolerate. If you tolerate substandard behavior as a leader, you're going to see it all around your organization or your team or your business. In addition to the results landing on the leader absolutely must make it a point to identifying the weakest factor on the team and then doing something about it, either helping them or releasing them. What you learn to tolerate becomes the new standard. A true leader enforces high standards and encourages those under his or her supervision to adopt extreme ownership as well. In the business example that the author set out in this chapter, the CEO of a company had to ultimately fire his CTO, even though he was talented, because the CTO refused to own up to his part in the decline of the company. The CTO refused to adopt an extreme ownership mindset and chose instead to blame others. Everybody else was at fault here, not him. Once he was replaced, though, the company was back on track and on its way towards living out its mission. Big idea number 3, believe. Knowing the why behind the mission leads to better success. This chapter, this big idea, believe, is about casting and catching vision. Every mission is bigger than the leader or those below them. If those you are leading do not understand why they're going in a certain direction, it's imperative that you get them to understand the long-term vision. It's imperative that you help them understand the why. Because without this, no tactics, no strategies, no matter how well thought out and developed, will be successful. The lack of understanding will sabotage all those beautifully laid out blueprints and plans. If you as a leader don't understand the why, then it's your responsibility to first go higher up and ask the questions to ensure that you understand and are able to further cast vision. If you're the one running the show, then you need to figure out what your why is for yourself and your organization. If you haven't identified that already, figure it out. Do a little workshop or close the door in your office. Give yourself some time to think about it and come up with some ideas, and then present those ideas to your closest confidants in the organization, or just communicate it with clarity and let everybody know that this is your organization's why. A leader must be a true believer in the mission, or the mission is destined to fail. The business application of this principle comes from a group of leaders who had no idea what their CEO was thinking. Jocko and Leif write about this example in their book, in which one of them, Jocko, was called into this particular organization to help workshop some of these leadership principles. And this group of managers, group of leaders in this particular organization, didn't know why the CEO was making a certain specific set of changes in the organization with regard to how they were paying out their employees. And the managers of these employees, who actually had to talk to them on a regular basis every day, were getting some really bad feedback from the employees about how they didn't think they were going to make as much money or more than they used to with this new payment structure. And so Jocko comes in, he talks to these guys, and he realizes that they just didn't want to look stupid by asking the CEO of the organization for clarification about, hey, why are you changing things up? Why are we doing things differently? Because it doesn't look like this is going to be a successful plan. But they never knew why the CEO was actually making these changes in the organization. So Jocko says, don't you think the CEO wants your business to succeed? Would they make a bad call and lose money and lose morale and lose employees on purpose? Of course not. And so Jocko walks into the CEO's office, asks for clarification on the manager's behalf, the set of managers that were sort of in the dark about why they were changing things in this organization. And once the message was actually clear and the why to the actions, the why to these changes was laid out, the leaders of the company suddenly then understood the importance of the steps their CEO had laid out and were better able to implement this new change in salary plans. And then these managers were then, of course, able to communicate these changes in a positive way, showing the benefits of what would happen in this new shift in their payment structure, their salary plans. So the bottom line here is this. If you're unwilling to ask the crucial clarifying questions, get the details, get down to the nitty-gritty, If you're unwilling to ask those questions required to understand a given objective, then you're failing as a leader. And if you're not actually communicating and clarifying those calls that you make as a leader, then you're also failing. So the road goes both ways. It's a dual commitment. Clarify, ask questions. Don't be afraid to dig down and get those details because you're going to need them. Big idea number four, check the ego. Big idea number four is about your ego. In chapter four of the book, Jocko shares the SEAL's decision to fit in with the Marines that they were working with and to adhere to the more clean-shaven, short haircuts, and standard uniforms in order to form a more unified team. Often, the authors tell us, when we lack humility and put ourselves above others, mistakes can be made. And sometimes those mistakes are irreparable. We can't go back and fix them. Most of the time, luckily, we can. But why put yourself in that place in the first place? We become so busy elevating our own usefulness and looking down at others that it creates devastating results for us. It affects the planning process, the ability to hear and take good advice, and the ability to listen and access criticism. This chapter, this big idea, also explores personal discipline and why it is so important. A daily discipline allows a soldier to be prepared in all situations. The discipline in the small things spills over into everything else. The high and tight haircuts, the physical fitness, the daily routine, these things prepare the soldier and or the manager, the CEO, the leader, for the moments when they have to respond and even adapt. The subject of discipline is further emphasized in the final chapter as well. And really throughout the book, they've got little nuggets of wisdom about how powerful it is to become a person of self-discipline. As Jocko says in the book, discipline equals freedom. Now, the business application to checking the ego revolved around the mistake of a drilling superintendent who made a decision that was outside of his authority and caused major problems in doing so. Until the CEO was able to take extreme ownership of the situation by taking on the blame himself, then the problem at hand could not be addressed. The CEO had to model what it looked like to check the ego in order for the drilling superintendent's vision to not be clouded by his own ego as well. Once the ego was out of the picture, it became simpler to discuss the problem at hand and get the company back on track. Part 2, Laws of Combat. Big idea number 5, cover and move. In combat, the ability to rely on your teammates is absolutely essential. You have to know that they have your back and that they need to know you have theirs as well. The chapter begins with Jocko sharing about a time that he forgot this simple truth and operated independently from a supporting squad. Teamwork, it's an everyday life and death reality for our SEAL, and it's just as important in the success of a company. All elements of a team are important and need to work in sync to accomplish the mission. These roles within the team need to offer mutual support in line with the same goals. It's not about competition, it's about teamwork. It's the leader's responsibility to create an atmosphere that fosters cover and move, as they say, as opposed to individualistic advancement. When the team succeeds, everybody succeeds. Cover and move, as they put it, is a reminder that the entire team is in this together. Everybody's in it together, cover and move. It's an encouragement to build personal relationships and to work together in order to win. Work together. Don't fight those who are trying to accomplish the same mission as you. Think about how this works in your organization. How many political issues are there? So much backbiting, so much duplicity. Think about all the politics that happens in the office and in the workplace, in the modern day corporation. That's not where the politics should be happening. That's not where the battles should be happening. That's not where the little wars should be blowing up. You guys should be working together as a team to make sure that nobody else from the outside messes with you. So that make sure you can advance in the marketplace so that you can serve your customers, your clients, the people that you serve at the best possible ability that you can, yourself as well as your organization. But unfortunately, too many organizations eat themselves alive by creating all these battles and competing with each other within an organization. But Jocko and Leif tell us, you got to work together. Don't fight those who are trying to accomplish the same mission as you are. Find a way to uplift and support one another, and the success will be even greater. Big idea number 6, simple. Combat and life can get messy and complex. This big idea, this chapter aptly titled Simple, begins with the story of an overeager young officer ready to prove himself. The routes that he's laid out for patrol are complex and they're long. And it isn't long before he comes to realize that it's best to just keep things as simple as possible in the beginning and to slowly progress to the longer, more dangerous routes. Sure enough, the first time they roll out of the gate, they're ambushed. Now, had they not kept it simple, there would have been major casualties. Imagine going and taking very complex orders with all sorts of different turns and things of that nature, especially in the middle of a war zone. So much confusion would have ensued. One group of men goes this way, another group of men goes that way, and another group of men doesn't even know which way to go. They're lost. Imagine how many problems would have arisen if that were the case, if he hadn't decided to say, you know what, this is way too complex right now, I need to simplify. Simplifying was essential to success. Plans and orders absolutely must be focused with simple communication. They must be communicated in a clear and concise way. Directions need to be given in such a way that the lowest denominator on the team understands them clearly. As the leader, no matter how much time, no matter how much energy you've put into the explanation, if those you are leading do not understand, then you've failed them. It's vital to keep plans and communications as simple as possible. In the business application of this chapter, the employees were confused as to what the leadership wanted them to focus on. The sales plan was too complex and difficult to understand. The rewards or sales bonuses needed to have a clear correlation with the activities that they were undergoing and doing on the marketplace, on the sales floor, in order for the bonuses and pay plan to be understood. They needed to be able to connect that. The salespeople needed to know that, okay, if I do this and this and this, then I'll get this reward or this bonus. Plans in combat and in business need to be simple and direct as possible so that everyone understands what they are being asked to do and why they are being asked to do it. When everyone has a clear understanding of expectations, the mission then becomes simpler to achieve. The fog of war is cleared and the mission is completed. So, quick question for you before we move on to the next big idea. What is it under your leadership, in your organization, in your division, under your control, that is not as simple as it can be? What is too complex right now? And how can you simplify it and communicate it in a simple way as well? Big idea number 7, prioritize and execute. The fog of war can become very confusing and overwhelming. It's essential to know the priority. Once the top priority is taken care of, then the team can attack the second priority, and then the third priority, and then the fourth priority, and so on and so forth without becoming overwhelmed. The leader must remain calm in order to make clear decisions. SEALs remind themselves of this principle with the phrase, relax, look around, and make a call. Relax, look around, and make a call. In order to do this, the leader must stay a step or two ahead of the problem. Priorities can shift, and the leader must be capable of maintaining cool states of mind and must have the ability to shift the rest of the team's mentality as well. Giving in to the fog of war or the feeling of being overwhelmed will derail this important role as a leader. The business application within this chapter dealt with a CEO who had a large number of plans. Jocko and Leif reined him in, encouraging him to prioritize and execute. They began by asking him a simple question. Out of all the projects on your plate right now, which one do you feel is the most important? That's what they asked him. They were consulting for this organization. This guy was way out of control. He didn't have everything under his control. He didn't know how to prioritize. He couldn't execute, of course, because he didn't know what his priorities were. He had too much stuff going on. He had way too many plans. So they asked him, out of everything you've got going on right now, out of all the projects on your plate, which one do you feel is the single most important one? Then the next question, does your team know that this is the priority? You see, when nothing's getting accomplished, chances are you are spread out way too thin. Redirect the company's full attention to the priority before moving on to the next. There can only be one single priority at a time, one most important thing at a time. So focus on that and communicate that to the rest of your organization as well. Trying to do everything at once actually sabotages your success because you don't get anything done. A leader needs to be able to step back and see what's most important in that very moment, and then redirect those under his care to execute on that one priority as well. Big idea number 8, decentralized command. Junior leaders must feel empowered by their leaders to make decisions to accomplish the mission. Teams are organized within teams for maximum effectiveness, and in order for this to work, everything up to this point in the book summary, the big ideas we discussed, are going to need to be implemented. The leader must take extreme ownership and check their ego at the door while instilling the same value into his junior leaders or her junior leaders. The vision needs to be cast in a clear and concise way for all members to truly believe in what they're doing. People tend to not be capable of managing more than 6 to 10 people at a time. And this is why junior leaders are so important. You want to cascade that leadership down. Capable team leaders leading teams in strategic moments are necessary in both combat and in the civilian workforce. When a leader has provided clear and simple communication, casted a vision, has the trust of his team, and has put forth the plan of execution, he can trust his junior leaders to make the best possible decisions in the moment. So if you're the one running an organization or if you're in a leadership role, keep those things in mind. Anytime you have a new project, a priority, make sure that you provide your people with a clear and simple communication, cast a vision, have the trust of your team that they'll actually do it, make sure that they understand it, and then put forth a plan of execution and delegate that responsibility to each individual who's responsible for their share of executing around this priority, around this plan. If you can do that, then you will be able to trust that your people and your junior leaders, if you have them, are going to be able to make the best possible decisions to realize this vision and make it a success. Part 3, sustaining victory. Big idea number 9, plan. A leader must not get dragged into the details, but instead focus on the bigger picture. Planning, in this case, is crucial. It's critical. While every contingency can never be planned for, you can work towards coming as close as possible for planning for those what-if scenarios that can potentially occur and impede your success. In war, it's essential to go through all of the what-if scenarios in order to be best prepared for whatever can potentially happen. Following missions, the SEALs would have a post-operational debrief. This was to better prepare for the next mission by going over all the things that had just happened. Mistakes, successes, things that could be done differently. In combat and in life, the unexpected stuff just happens. We can't see everything. We can't predict everything. Being prepared for what might be around the corner makes us adaptable, dynamic, and ready in the moment for whatever is thrown at us. When you're planning, you should always first analyze the mission. Do you understand the instructions that have been sent down to you? If you're the one making the instructions, are you making them as clearly, as concisely, as simply as possible, and then communicating with that same clarity? Take stock of the personnel, assets, and time that you have at your disposal. Empower the junior leaders below you to their possible courses of action and keep it clear and concise. Figure out the simplest course and prioritize the efforts around the best and simplest course of action. Doing this will reserve the vital energy necessary to combat diversions and readjust course when necessary as well. Plan for disruptions throughout the execution. Don't be taken unaware. Problem shoot potential risks and continually check the plan against any new data as you go. Be ready to adjust as necessary and to do so quickly. Make sure everyone involved understands and encourage questions to clarify any poor communication. Plan for everything. Big idea number 10, leading up and down the chain of command. Quote, when setting expectations, no matter what has been said or written, if substandard performance is accepted and no one is held accountable, if there are no consequences, that poor performance becomes the new standard. Unquote. Those under your command are not the only ones you lead. Everyone who is a part of your world, you are responsible for in some capacity, subordinates and superiors. Don't wait for your leaders to tell you what you need to do or what you should do. Instead, tell them what you are going to do to accomplish the mission. Be ahead of the curve. Be proactive. Show your leadership skills and your dedication to the actual mission. Take extreme ownership of the situation around you, up and down, and make the necessary changes within yourself to better enable the entire team. You don't need to have a title to be a leader. Every component of the team is focused on their specific job and specialty. It's important that everyone understands each other's roles as well and how they fit into the bigger picture of the organization. It's not necessary that everyone understand the individual details, but rather trusts in their team's competence and belief in the mission. If the team is not doing what they need to do, then you, the leader, must assess the situation and implement extreme ownership. What is it that you're missing? Is it how you're communicating? Are your instructions simple and concise? Are you leading down the chain of command effectively by casting vision and making things simple and clear? Or do you need to adjust? If the team is not receiving the necessary support from higher up, you need to reassess and implement extreme ownership. Are you clearly communicating the needs of your team up the chain of command? Are you answering the questions being given to you and clearly articulating the why behind your team's needs? Ask questions. Answer questions. Do so as necessary. Maintain an open line of communication and lead everyone in your world. Big idea number 11, decisiveness amid uncertainty. You're never going to have 100% of the information in combat or in the business world. That's just the reality. Waiting for 100% of the information will lead to delays and the inability to execute the mission. Just waiting around for things isn't going to get you anywhere. Leaders must be ready to make educated decisions based on the knowledge that they do have rather than worrying about the knowledge that they don't have. This principle, combined with your previous experience, is the key to becoming a decisive leader. The book began with a blue-on-blue incident, if you recall from the earlier Big Idea. Here, in this chapter, in this Big Idea, we see history nearly repeat itself as the SEAL team was working closely with another unit and, through the confusion of urban warfare, mistook a friendly for an enemy sniper. The quick thinking, decisiveness amid uncertainty, and unwillingness to back down prevented another blue-on-blue incident. Now, the business example in this chapter centers around two leaders within a company who are at odds with one another. Their superior feels trapped, as both leaders have threatened to walk, taking company secrets and employees with them if the other remains. They wanted each other out. The superior could not afford to lose either team and decided, at first, to just not do anything about it, to not act. And after talking with Jocko and Leaf, they were called into this organization to help them with this problem, she realized, the leader, that not acting is not the correct solution, and neither is choosing between one of the two. Since both leaders were more interested in their own well-being rather than the mission, the decision was made to actually fire both and advance other members of each team into those leadership roles. By tackling the problem at hand immediately, the company was able to put out any fires before they began and had a stronger team because of it. It's important as the leader to be decisive in your actions, even amidst uncertainty and chaos. Take control of the situation and own the outcome. Big idea number 12, discipline equals freedom. This final big idea reinforces the importance of discipline. Using SEALs and their dedication as a standard, discipline is highlighted in this chapter through small and big moments in life. Really, essentially, discipline is something that we must all, not only as leaders, but as subordinates, as team members, as anybody walking this earth, should parlay into every area of their life. And becoming incredibly disciplined in one area, by the way, allows us to become more disciplined in other areas of our lives as well. Raising up your standards in one area, becoming more disciplined in one area, raises up your standards and discipline levels in every other area that matters to you as well. This big idea on discipline, discipline equals freedom, it's a reminder that true discipline is developed when no one is looking, and how living a disciplined life opens you up to greater areas of freedom as well. Here's a great quote from the co-author Jocko Willink to close out this final big idea on discipline. No more excuses. No more I'll start tomorrow. No more just this once. No more accepting the shortfalls of my own will. No more taking the easy road. No more bowing down to whatever unhealthy or unproductive thoughts float through my mind. No. No more. No more waiting for the perfect moment. No more indecision and no more lies. No more weakness. No, no more. Now is the time for strength. And through strength, and through will, and through unwavering discipline, I will become what I want to be. I will become who I want to be. And then, and only then, will I rest and say, no more. Closing notes. The key takeaway from this book is this. When it's all said and done, this is a book about the very essence of leadership. At the end of the day, a true leader must lead, but also must be willing and able to follow. True leaders are not intimidated or overbearing. They must be aggressive, calm, and confident, though never cocky. Leaders are brave, but not foolhardy. They must pay attention to details, but not become overwhelmed or weighed down by them. Humility must be their trademark as they set ego aside. A leader, as they tell us in the book, has nothing to prove, but everything to prove. A true leader looks first to himself when problems arise. He models extreme ownership, extreme leadership, and inspires those around him through his action, humility, and passion. A few actionable insights as we close out this audiobook summary. As a true leader, it's your job to look first to yourself when problems arise and to then own them. In fact, your job is to take full responsibility and ownership of everything under your control in your world. That's what taking extreme ownership is really all about. The next insight: work daily to become a model of extreme leadership and inspire those around you through your action, humility, and passion. Next, when things seem like they're getting out of control, remind yourself to relax. Then take a moment to pause, look around, and prioritize your next most important thing right now. Next, be sure to communicate clearly and concisely with those you lead so that everyone understands exactly what is expected, what actions they must take to realize a successful project. And finally, cast a powerful vision and explain the why of your mission so that both yourself as well as those you lead will have a strong and inspiring reason to carry out your mission on a daily basis. About the authors: Jocko Willink and Leif Babin are both decorated retired Navy SEAL officers who served together in the SEAL Team 3's task unit Bruiser during the Battle of Ramadi. Together, they co-founded Echelon Front. Through Echelon Front, they teach leadership principles learned on the battlefield and how to translate them in the business world. This book is a culmination of the most potent and powerful leadership lessons that they've learned. Thank you for listening to this Flashbooks audio summary on Extreme Ownership. Written and published by GetFlashBooks.com, narrated by Dean Bakari, original authors Jocko Willink and Leif Babin. For more great self-improvement and business book summaries you can read or listen to anytime, anywhere, visit us at GetFlashBooks.com.